underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester Center, Vermont, and Saratoga Springs, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in Public Health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Carolyn Leavitt's latest novel, Cruel Beautiful World, is about coming of age in 1969. It's about wild love, rebellion, and finding oneself in the time of Woodstock and the Manson murders. The story follows 16-year-old Lucy Gold, who runs away with her English teacher, William, to rural Pennsylvania. Lucy leaves behind a big sister and the aunt who raised them after their parents died. As she and William try to build a new home for themselves, William becomes more and more controlling. The novel is a haunting, nuanced portrait of love, sisters, and the impossible legacy of family. Caroline Leavitt is the author of many novels, including Is This Tomorrow? And Pictures of You. Again, the name of the novel is Cruel Beautiful World, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Caroline Leavitt to this week's book show.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
This novel, from my understanding, comes from a personal story. Give us a sense of...
Yes, it does. It does. This is a novel I've wanted to write since I was 17 years old. It was in the 1970s, and I was sitting behind this girl in study hall. And while I was telling her that I was going to go off and be a writer in Paris and be a hippie, she told me she was engaged and that she had been engaged for 2 years, and they were just waiting until she was 18. And the only bad thing she ever said about her boyfriend was that he was a little bit controlling. So when I got out of college, I heard the news that she had decided to break up with this guy. She wanted to go to college. She wanted to see other people. And he went into her kitchen and got a knife and stabbed her 42 times. I was horrified because I couldn't figure out if she had been with him for 3 years. Didn't she see any signs of violence, or didn't her parents or anybody else? I just didn't understand her. And then 10 years after that, I got in my own controlling relationship. To my surprise, it was 2 weeks before my own wedding, and my fiance died very suddenly of a genetic heart glitch. And I was just crazy with grief, and I was grieving and grieving for months and months, and I decided I can't do this anymore. I just can't. And I decided that the only way to get over my grief would be to get involved in another relationship. My friends told me I was crazy. My grief counselor said, if you do this, I'm not going to see you. But I did it anyway. So I met this guy, and he seemed perfectly nice, creative, fine. And the first 3 months were great because I didn't grieve, because we were busy all the time. We were going from bowling to movies to plays to this to that until I was so exhausted I would just go to sleep. And then after about 6 months, it started getting weird. Now, he never lost his temper. He never, smashed dishes or hurt me physically in any way. And his voice was always very calm and soft, but he started to be controlling. And the thing is, when somebody talks to you in a very soft, loving voice over and over, you start to believe it. And he would do things like tell me, even though I was 100 pounds, things like, oh, honey, Do you really have to eat dinner tonight? You look so much better if you're just like a touch thinner. And I would think about it and say, well, maybe he's right. Maybe I shouldn't eat. He didn't want me to see my friends because he said they were a bad influence on me. And again, I thought, well, he loves me. Maybe he's right. Maybe they are. And he didn't want me to see his friends because he thought I was flirting with them. So I began to feel that he was following me around, which was really unnerving. But every time I asked him about it, he'd say, no, I wasn't. And the only thing that got me to leave was after 2 years, I was working on a novel, and I happened to open up the page, and a whole chapter was gone. It was just totally missing. And in its place was this one page of jokes, just jokes. And I turned around and looked at him and said, did you do this? And he said, yeah, it's better, isn't it? And I said, no, it's not better. It's, how could you do that? It's my work. It's mine. And he stood up and he came over to me and he put both of his hands down on my shoulders hard. And he said, Caroline, I want you to listen to me because this is the way it's going to be from now on. There is no you. There is no me. There's only us. And at that moment, I knew that I had to get out. And that was when I was able to leave. So that whole idea of what control looks like was really interesting to me, and I wanted to write about it. So I did.
At what point did you know that it was the time to write about it, that enough time had passed and you had processed it both emotionally and as a writer?
It was a long time after that. It was after I left him, it took me about another 4 years to feel that I was myself again. And then I met the guy who's my husband now, and we were together for years. And it was actually just about 4 years ago when I happened to see something online from my high school friend's sister, who was still obsessed by her sister's murder. And she was asking people, do you have any information? I just want to know what happened. I feel so guilty. And as soon as I saw that, I thought, oh, okay, this isn't just a novel about control. It's now going to be a novel about sisters and responsibility and how sometimes you can't fix things that you want to fix. And the novel took off from there. And then I started writing.
The girl that you knew in high school and her boyfriend, there was a great age difference.
Oh, yeah.
Between those two. Do you think that that plays into it in any way?
Oh, definitely.
The dynamic?
Definitely. Because first of all, you know, when you're 17, to have the attention of somebody who's 28 or 30 is very seductive and exciting. And you think, oh, he's going to protect me and we're going to have this great life and I'm different because of this. And I think for somebody who's 28 or 30, who's going after a 17-year-old girl, there's definitely something that's not right about that. And you have to wonder why he would want somebody so young. And I think it's because people that young are more pliable. It's easier to control them and to say, well, I'm older than you and I know best. So that definitely was a factor in it.
Caroline Leavitt is our guest. The name of the new novel is Cruel, Beautiful World. So with these real seeds, give us an idea of how you wanted to set it up and your core characters that you begin with in the novel.
Okay. It's actually two different stories. I wanted to set it up first with Lucy, who's 17 years old, who feels that she's not that smart, she's not going to succeed in life. And here's this 30-year-old English teacher who's telling her that she's brilliant, she's a great writer, and he wants to take her to one of these back-to-land paradises that are springing up in the 70s. And all is going to be wonderful. And she, of course, wants to go. And of course, it's a paradise at first, but then it quickly turns into a nightmare. But riding alongside that story is the story of Charlotte, her older sister, who is a very different person, who's a girl who's more straight-laced. She's always fixed everything. She's got her eye on the prize, which is she wants to continue college and be a veterinarian. And she's always had to take care of a little sister and she's getting tired of it. And alongside that too is the story of Iris, their older adoptive mother, who at 80 years old is losing control of how she's going to care for her two daughters. And she feels that her life is over. When I first set it up, I wanted it to be a book about first love, last love, and dangerous love. And the more I wrote, the more it started to morph into all these other issues about how can we fix things? And is it our responsibility to fix things? And what does it mean to be responsible for somebody else and yet still be responsible for yourself? And the novel just kept expanding from that.
Did you always know that you wanted it to take place in the 60s?
Yes, I did. Because I grew up in the late 60s, and I was in high school in the 70s and college. And I can remember, in terms of cruel and beautiful, there was definitely a demarcation. In the 60s, my older sister and my mom took me to these peace marches, and they were peaceful. They were great. Nobody fought. Nobody did anything. There were balloons and food. And there was this feeling that the people in the 60s were really and truly going to change the world for good. And then when it was in the 70s and I got to college, everything sort of changed. There were no more peaceful protests. Students were bombing buildings. Two girls I went to Brandeis with, 19 years old, got guns and robbed a bank in Boston and got on the FBI most wanted list for just until I think about 5 years ago when they came up from underground. Everything that had been beautiful about the 60s suddenly was ugly. Drugs. People took drugs in the 60s to find God or to really get to know another person on a deep spiritual level. In the 70s, a lot of my friends were dying because they were just taking drugs for the sake of drugs. Mm. And then, of course, there were the Mansons. And when the Mansons came out, all that sense of community where you could hitch anywhere by yourself and it would be safe and everybody would pick you up, it just stopped abruptly. And you could feel it in the air that things were not the way you thought it was going to be. And the question was always, well, so what are you going to do now?
Talk a little bit about the relationship between these two sisters as one really is looking to protect her and save her from herself.
Mm-hmm. It's the relationship between the two sisters has a lot to do with my relationship with my older sister. My older sister and I were really, really close growing up. I mean, she was my heroine, and I followed everything she did, and I wanted to be her. She was just better than me in every way. And then when she turned 20, something happened, and she began to become very, very troubled. And I spent a lot of years trying to help her, trying to take care of her, trying to fix her, and everything I did backfired and made things worse, just worse and worse and worse. And it's only recently that I've begun to realize that I can't fix her as much as I want to. I really can't fix her. She needs to be able to fix herself. And so I've had to pull back from my inclination to call her up and say, well, what about this? Why don't you go back to school? Why don't you do this? What if you take medication? And on and on and on. And it was a really difficult thing for me to do. But once I did it, it made our relationship a little bit better. Not a lot yet, but a little bit better. So I was sort of writing these characters as a kind of love story to my sister, where it was a way for me to express to her, I've always loved you, and I love you now, and I'll always love you, and I'll be there if you need me, instead of saying, I'm going to be there and take care of this for you. And it still makes me feel really weird not to be taking care of things for her, but I think it's a healthier thing for both of us.
Was the novel at all therapeutic in writing of understanding the nuances of the relationship?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And a lot of that had to do with my editor, because when I first turned it in, the relationship with the girls was very fractious. It's more like what my relationship with my sister is now. And my editor said, you know, you have to find the love between these girls. You can still have it be tragic and dark, but we have to see what their bond is. So the deeper I went and the more I wrote, the more difficult it was, but the more I began to understand the relationship I have with my sister and the love that I have for her, and to realize that, you know, that might not be enough to cement our relationship again, but at least now I understand it. And to me, the writing about her became a kind of love letter. It really did. And that made me feel a lot better.
I realize this is a very talk showy question, so I apologize. But is there a point where you feel like saying, okay, here's my novel, I want to give it to you, my sister, and have you read this?
I did give it to her, and she won't read it. she's not interested in reading it. And I said, okay, well, maybe someday you will. And I'm hoping that maybe someday she will. I feel that it's really important for me to be on the side of love. You know, I love you. I'm here for you, but I can't fix your life. But I will support you if you want to fix your life yourself. So that's the way it is now.
Caroline Leavitt is our guest on the book show. The name of the new novel is Cruel, Beautiful World. There is real hard-won love in this novel, but it really comes after understanding the darker side of love.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's sort of like in order to understand pure joy, sometimes you have to understand pure misery and realize, and also you have to break free from patterns and open up and realize what it is that's keeping you from love and what you need to do to get there.
What is it, do you think, about a family bond of just the nature of the relationship, but just also the word itself of being a sister or being a cousin or a family bond that is so much stronger that gives us at least a feeling that we should try to work on that relationship, even if there is really no reason to work on that relationship?
Well, I think it has to do with propaganda that, you know, the family is everything.
Oh, that.
You know, your family is everything. And also the feeling that, like, well, it's your blood, you know, your friends won't protect you, but your family will. But there's a demarcation. I mean, my father was a really sulky, horrible brute. And he never talked. He always yelled. And to me, there was never any reason to try to build a relationship with him because it always fell apart. There was nothing good. There was no benefits except I would end up feeling horrible. So in that case, I felt, okay, I have to step away from that. With my sister, there were tremendous benefits to trying to patch that up. She's really smart. She's really funny. She's really creative. She's a great writer. We were really close as kids, and she was my protector. Of course, I want that relationship back. I don't know if I can have it, but that's one where I'm certainly going to try because I feel there's something left. But my father died many years ago, but if he was still living, sometimes I think it's okay not to have anything to do with family members. Sometimes they're just cruel, or sometimes they're psychotic, or sometimes they really do want to do you damage. And just because they're your family, it doesn't mean you can't protect yourself and still be a good person.
And in trying to figure all of this out, one of the things that came through to me in the novel is how difficult that we search for what is the truth and what is a lie, and how hard that is to pin down.
It's really hard to pin down because we all have stories that we tell ourselves about ourselves that we believe, and we act on them. I mean, Lucy believes that William is going to be good to her. And when he's not, she believes that her sister is going to save her and everything is going to be fine. And that's not really just not true. I believed that I could save my sister, that I have the solutions for her to have a better life. But her belief system is that any solution I give is trying to control her and I should stay out of her business. So you have these two opposing belief systems and it's just not going to work.
That idea that we come up with a narrative of what our life is, and we can believe that, but other people can look at it and say, okay, but that doesn't seem to really be what's going on there.
Right, right. Exactly. And it's until you yourself come to realize, oh, that person was right. I mean, there's a reason for holding on to misconceptions. Sometimes it's just stubbornness that I can do this myself and I don't need you. And sometimes it's just you believe the misconception. I mean, I spent my life believing I'm a Pollyanna and I can fix everybody. And it's just come recently to my attention that, you know what? No, you can't. Mm-hmm. And some people don't even want that. So my task now is to figure out, well, what do I do with that? How do I stop myself from doing that? And what does that mean to me in thinking of myself as a good person?
When you come to those realizations, and as you've indicated, they're realizations that you've come to fairly recently, does that impact how you look back on your previous work and novels and think, well, if I knew then what I know now, I would have perhaps looked at this differently?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I look back at them now and I think, oh, I would have definitely put in a different layer, you know, a more driving layer. I think I was much more, you know, things were black and white. You were either good or you weren't good. You did your best or you didn't do your best. And if you did your best, you were rewarded. And that's not true. And life is much more complicated than that. It's almost a partnership between you and another person. And for change to work, you both have to want to change.
One of the things that also came to me while reading the story is that we're so often told that we all make mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. We all make mistakes. But even in making mistakes, those mistakes can bring really unfair consequences.
Right. Right, right. That's particularly, and when I was writing about Charlotte has one moment where she could save her sister. And instead, because she is the kind of person she is, where everything has to be done right and has to be done with responsibilities, she puts it off until the next day. And there's dire consequences. And it's kind of muddy because you could say, well, that's a mistake. But on the other hand, how would she have known it was a mistake? She was just acting in the way she always does. So it gets into more murkier questions of who's to blame? And is there such a thing as blame?
Did that have to be concrete for you to move on and write?
For me personally?
Yes.
No, it really didn't, because I'm still sort of figuring it out. I'm thinking about it a lot more. I know I still try to always, you know, do the right thing and be kind to people and try to figure it out. But learning to pull away when people don't want me to help them or to offer suggestions, or they don't think my suggestions are right for them, and maybe they're not, that's a really hard thing for me to think about, because I'm the kind of person where I write lists every day of all the things I have to do, including things with relationships. And I've come to the conclusion that, you know what, life is mysterious and it's messy and sometimes things don't work out and I have to open up to that. I can't know the future and I have to feel comfortable with that.
And that idea of that there could be tragic consequences, but even that A, may be necessary, and B, may be tragic to you, but not as tragic to the other person who is living through it.
Right, right. This thing with my sister is definitely more tragic for me. she's going on living her life the way she's always lived it, and she's used to it. And I think in a way, being used to a bad situation is easier than saying, okay, I'm going to change. And it's difficult for me because in my head, like a drumbeat, I keep thinking, I can make you happy. I can make you happy if you just let me. And it's not something she wants me to do. And I need to figure that out and understand why not. Like, what does it really mean that she doesn't want me to help her? And that's difficult.
Here's a question that's probably impossible to answer, but do you think it would be different in the relationship if the birth order was different?
Yeah, I do. I do. But I also think it depends on the personalities, you know, the personalities at that were there. I mean, I was always this kind of rebellious in my own way little kid where I was, you know, when I reached 17, I decided I was going to do what I was going to do, what I felt was right. With my sister, even though she was older, she followed whatever my parents wanted her to do. So I had the benefit of seeing that and saying, well, that's not good. You know, you have to make your own decisions here. So I was able to break free from that. And I think because I was younger, it was harder for my sister to say, well, Caroline did it. Maybe I can too. If I had been older, then she might have said, well, she's had the experience and she's older and she did it. So maybe I can too. Because I was able to do a lot of things that she couldn't, which would have benefited her.
Caroline Leavitt's new novel is Cruel, Beautiful World. It is published by Algonquin Books of Chapel Hill. Thank you so much for sharing. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much for the great questions.
A delight to have you. Thank you.
Thank you.
We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org. You can also listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LaDuke produces our program. Special thanks to Argo Studios in Manhattan. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening. For The Book Show, I'm Joe Donahue.